A brief history of the Holy Roman Empire. We are now in a new section where we're going to begin the Crusades and deal with what's going on with Germany as well as the Crusades. So this introduction today is basically about moving from Gregory the VII to Pope Urban II. Now, the death of Gregory the VII seems to at first bring some peace and stability to the realm. Even Robert Guiscard, the Pope's Lord Protector, died a few months later during a siege against the Byzantine Empire. Pope Clement III was invited back to Rome, where the people eagerly accepted him. But the Normans were not content to let this be the end of the story. Gregory VII had been the best of Norman allies, and the Normans saw Clement as nothing more than a German puppet. Had the Normans been willing to accept Clement, Gregory might have been just another sour footnote in the history, but of course they weren't. The Normans soon elected their own popes, and upon ascension of Urban II, the Gregorian popes would overshadow the Clementine popes. It was with Urban II that the Crusades began, and the history of Europe was changed forever. The passing of Gregory and Clement's installation in Rome gave Henry IV the legitimacy of rule that he had hoped for all these many years. Only the weak rival Herman caused Henry IV trouble, but Herman was unable to gain the military victories or support that his predecessor Rudolf had. In southern Italy, the death of Robert Guiscard threw Norman Italy into a power struggle between two brothers, Roger and Bohemond. In the meantime, the Norman prince, Jordan of Capua, was able to gain enough stability to try and reinstall a Gregorian pope. After a full year, Jordan pressured Gregory's supporters into nominating a new pope, ignoring Clement III's legitimacy. They chose Victor III, who had been a close friend of Gregory's despite some public disputes. The people of Rome, however, were not about to allow such usurpation. They remembered the last time the Normans had come in to install a pope against Clement, and they had not forgiven. The ruins and crumbled buildings still remained as a testament to the barbarity of the Normans. Clement was a true pope, and the Romans would accept no other. Rioting and violence cropped up in the city, and Victor fled for his life before being consecrated. For a time, Victor was content to accept the failure and live quietly as a monk, but the Normans were not. A year later, in March, Jordan of Capua put pressure on Victor to convene a synod in Capua, his own abode. The synod, of course, recognized Victor as the true pope and declared Clement an impostor. Was now up to Jordan and the Gregorian allies to enforce the synod's ruling. The political situation was difficult. Jordan didn't want a repeat of Robert Guiscard's affairs in Rome, but there was no doubt that a pope could not be recognized as legitimate unless he was consecrated and was ruling from Rome. A siege would take years, and it would surely send Henry IV to Clement's rescue. But Jordan had gained access to the city in order to make Victor's ascension official. His troops decided that St. Peter's Cathedral was sufficient for his cause because St. Peter's was not enclosed in the main city. It had at one time lain beyond the walls of Rome, but was later enclosed by a new wall to protect it from invaders. This new section of Rome was called the Leontine City. Jordan resolved to lay siege to this section of Rome and then use St. Peter's as Victor's palace. The plan worked. In May, Jordan's forces were able to penetrate the Leontine section of the city without breaching the main walls of Rome. Victor was consecrated, but Clement's own troops lay within Rome. Fighting immediately broke out over the control of Leontine. Victor fled, but was urged to return by the Countess Matilda, one of Gregory's greatest allies. With her assistance, Victor's place in St. Peter's seemed to be assured, but in July, Victor heard rumors that Henry IV was returning to Rome to assist Clement. Once again, Victor fled. This time, he would never return. Stricken by a serious illness, he died in September. It seems that the position of Henry IV and Clement was secure, but they underestimated the willpower of the Normans. It would be almost another year before another Gregorian pope would be elected. But this one, Urban II, would eventually prevail, though he would die while Clement was still alive. It was his rule that established a Gregorian line of popes, and he was the one who called forth the First Crusade. It all seemed well for Henry IV in 1087. He crowned his son Conrad king, had seen Victor III's bid for the papal tiara fail. But in 1088, the Gregorians, with Norman backing, again elected another pope, Pope Urban II. In terms of history, there seems little doubt that Clement was recognized by all but the Gregorian party and the Normans of Italy as the true pope. Victor III and Urban II, by all rights, appear to have been anti-popes. But history shapes reality. Modern Catholic canons and historians all call Clement III the anti-pope, and list both Victor III and Urban II as true popes. Those who lived at the time, however, knew who was the anti-pope and who was the legitimate pope, but it would depend upon events of the next decade. It would be many months before the Normans and the Gregorians again felt strong enough to elect another pope, and even then they were forced to elect him south of Rome. This new pope, Urban II, realized that his papacy depended upon his ability not only to establish himself in Rome, but also to win over the kings, dukes, and counts of the Holy Roman Empire. This would not be an easy task, but by winning over the kings, it would be easier a task to win support of the kings, dukes, and counts. In Italy, Urban already had support of the Norman dukes as well as the Countess Matilda. In Germany, the followers of Hermann lent their support as well. Urban resolved to strengthen the bond between his allies in Italy and those in Germany. One of Henry's most hated enemies in Germany was the Guelph of Bavaria. Urban arranged for a marriage between him and Matilda, creating a powerful political force. This marriage was strictly political, and when it ended in divorce in 1095, Urban offered no criticism. The importance of the marriage alliance went far beyond the reign of Urban II and Henry IV, for the Guelphite party became strong advocates of papal theocracy for centuries. Their enemies, the Ghibellines, favored a mild form of separation of church and state. The two parties would war with one another, often literally for centuries. For the time being, it merged the two armies into two powerful political figures. Urban's next step was to expand his support by establishing himself in Rome. Unlike the situation during the reign of Victor III, the Normans were able to penetrate the city wall of Rome and establish Urban II as pope. This, combined with Urban's affirmation of Gregory VII's decree against investiture, led Henry IV to plan to rid himself of this anti-pope. So we have a real mess here. You know, we hear the words Ghibelline and Guelph. And eventually that will, by the Renaissance, break down in the two parties, one that is more pro-pope, the other that is more pro-Holy Roman Empire. Of course, Dante gets messed up in this because within the city of Florence, you have divisions within these groups. There's black Guelphs and white Guelphs and so forth and so on. And he's on the wrong side and ends up getting exiled for his political beliefs. And then after he becomes famous, they offered to pardon him so he could come back to the city. And he wouldn't take it. He said, "I did nothing wrong. You'll have to admit that I did nothing wrong." So he never came back. So if you go to Florence and you go to see the tomb of Dante, it's a cenotaph. It's a fake. He died in Ravenna. He's buried in Ravenna. And you have to go to Ravenna to see him. So we are on a really tortured series of podcasts now with the popes and the Holy Roman Empire. And now we're going to add the Crusades into this mix. Now the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987-1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.